Grade 4 Conference, Lecture 25, Norse Mythology, Part 3. In describing the stories in the Nibelungenlied, the Song of the Nibelungs, and also Wagner's The Ring of the Nibelung, we see something very clearly of the origins of Tolkien's great work, his Ring trilogy. And the more you get into Norse mythology, the more you see how powerfully this worked with Tolkien, and particularly, really, the more you look at the Germanic side. That was, he drew from there most strongly. So in the figure of Siegfried, who is the child of the grandchild of Wotan, who is Odin, we have here a human being who is especially created to free himself from being enthralled to the gods of, in a certain respect, not even knowing they exist, so that out of freedom, he can redeem the failings of the gods. He can redeem the lies, the compromises, the many shortcomings of which they have been guilty. It's a very, very powerful story. And it's not to say that I would never do it with a grade 4 class, but I would say that I have never met a fourth grade class of my own where I felt it was appropriate. That could change in the future. What I would suggest is, unlike Olaf Asteson and unlike the Kalevala, there is a place for this in the grade school curriculum, and this would probably be grade 6 when you're teaching the Middle Ages. And if you only had a German teacher, as in the old days, very likely you don't. This would be a great thing for the German teacher to work with so that he or she also is making a strong connection with the Middle Ages. It's very likely you're going to be stressing France and England in the Middle Ages. That's generally where the curriculum takes us. But if you can go into the German stories, that's also really great. So Siegfried does have a place. I would also say I'd urge you this summer to get hold of DVDs of the Metropolitan Opera's productions, not the most recent 21st century productions, which are maybe a bit too high tech, but the, I think, 1980s productions, maybe early 90s. They're on DVD, to at least look at Das Rheingold, the first of the great operas about the Ring. And if you want to go further, Die Walküre, the Valkyrie, the second one, fantastic. Siegfried is the third, and the fourth is The Twilight of the Gods, the Gedderdammerung. Not so much for the content, though the poetry, which Wagner also composed, is incredible, but to hear the music, to let that music work on you this summer, that will help you have those life-filled, powerful forces of will that you need to go into fourth grade. I would say that Wagner's operas fit the fourth grade curriculum like a hand in glove. Even though the content is not only the Siegfried Germanic stories, but it's even modernized. It's a very, very modern work of art. But the music goes back to those primal depths, and the music is sheer will. It is absolutely pure forces of will. And I could only say, if maybe every morning before you turn on this conference, you at least listen to a recording, or better yet, even watch the production and see how Wagner takes these figures and makes them not just three-dimensional, but four or even five-dimensional. I can't recommend that enough, though I would say again, the Siegfried stories, the Germanic versions of these myths, are probably not the best thing for your class. So we've kind of filtered out everyone. We've taken it all through the sieve, and what we're left with then are the Icelandic versions of the stories, which are the ones that I am going to be working with in the next lectures. I want to now discuss Rudolf Steiner's pictures of these Norse gods, Icelandic Norse gods, but I'll keep calling them Norse, and who they were. It's going to be somewhat esoteric, and in fact, if you really want to get esoteric, I would urge you to scroll down to the bottom of the contents page and look at the lectures from the Steiner course about the spiritual hierarchies. And I am going to share this with you, and once again in the grade 5 conference, I do something similar, though on a different level, because we talk about these gods, and it's interesting that among Western spiritual teachers, Steiner is one of the few who speaks about gods in the plural. And in fact, he rarely, very rarely, speaks about God with a capital G in the singular, but again and again stresses that polytheism actually will give us a much more accurate insight into at least the spiritual history of humanity than does monotheism. That monotheism is speaking about a very different complex of forces than mostly what we have been teaching. Now, this is very powerful because, think, in grade 1, now and then in the fairy tales, though they certainly have a pagan quality to them, but now and then God is evoked. You don't hear about gods in the fairy tales. There's a Christian element running through. And, you know, people will pray to God more often than not in periods of duress, even though there are all of these pagan fairies and gnomes and such creatures around. Grade 2, you're in the world of either the fables, which are agnostic, maybe here and there a god may be mentioned, small g. But in the stories of the saints, especially in the Orthodox Waldorf presentation of that, we are speaking there again out of a Christian impulse, though you're going to probably bring in other spiritual beings, people of good heart and goodwill from other cultures. But probably if you're doing that, you're not going to be speaking about anything religious. So if you ever relate to anything that's specifically religious in grade 2, once again, it is a god. Same with grade 3, of course, that many a teacher, rather than calling him Yahweh, will speak of the being leading the Israelites as God. Now, for the first time, you are getting into paganism. You are speaking of monotheism, big time, and you're certainly going to do this through grade 5 and through a good deal of grade 6 in talking about the Romans. So what is this? What is this polytheistic worldview? And why do we suddenly immerse the children in it in grade 4, after 3 years of relative piety and monotheism? What's going on here? So I want to go into this rather deeply because it has a good deal to do with this threshold over which the children are crossing, or through which, tunnel-like, they are passing at this age, and because it also is a foundation for what will go on in grades 4, 5, and 6 as we take the children into a very particular realm of consciousness and soul life that requires a polytheistic worldview to be understood. In his picture of human evolution, Rudolf Steiner speaks of there being three hierarchies, and he takes their names primarily from conventional Christian nomenclature. And one could also speak of these as the nine hierarchies as well, because each of these major hierarchical categories has three classes of beings within it. So I'm going to speak of the first hierarchy, which includes the beings that Steiner spoke of as angels, archangels, and archai. Three classes of beings, each one more developed and more advanced than the one below it. These are also the beings to whom Steiner alludes in the meditation that he gave to the very first Waldorf teachers in Stuttgart, a meditation that he regarded as so sacred that he refused to have it written down at that time. It was spoken aloud and memorized, and of course in our time, in which nothing is sacred, literally, you find that meditation in the newer editions of the study of man, as they're called today, the foundations of human experience. So he speaks there, again, of angels, archangels, and archai. And please look, read, listen to, rather, the Steiner course for greater detail. I'm going to move pretty quickly here. But the angels are those beings who are closest to us as human beings. Each one of us has one angel, and that is our guardian angel, who remains close to us throughout our entire lifetime. When we die, that angel goes on with us into the spiritual world, and there has other tasks, not all of them connected to us, some of them still linked to us. So we could say that angel lives on the earth, or connected to the earth, not literally on the earth, for as long as a human being lives. Above those angels, their commanders, their leaders, are the archangels. And archangels do not work closely with individual human beings, except in the most extraordinary circumstances, such as Joan of Arc. You can hear about her in the Grade 7 conference. But otherwise, they work with groups of human beings. That is to say, they work with group souls, which can be a whole people, a nation, connected with a common language. Or it can also be people who feel a very strong moral, ethical, interest connection with one another. That is to say, a religion can form a folk soul or a group soul. People who are working together deeply, profoundly, in an institutional setting also can establish a kind of archangelic identity there. And then lastly, hovering long above the, high above the archangels, are the archai. And the archai are not even connected to groups of human beings, but they are connected to long historical periods. They live most strongly in time. Just to go back for a moment, I said that the angel lives the span of a human life connected to the earth, 75, 85 years, let's say. An archangel working with a group that can transcend the lifespan of an individual, can even transcend the lifespan of generations, an archangel generally is connected to the earth for 250, 350, 400 years. So there's a being who stays connected with the earth in a looser way for a longer period of time. An archon, that is to say a single member of the archai, remains connected to the earth for a historical period where there, let's say, is a dynastic relationship between one historical period and another. And there we could say that's about 3,000 years, or sometimes longer. But there's no connection there, or hardly any connection, to individual human beings, though sometimes a literary critic might speak of the age of Shakespeare or the age of Dante. A political scientist might speak of the age of Elizabeth, the Elizabethan age, the age of discovery, things like that. These ages often have a link to archai beings. In the next lecture, we'll see how these beings are related to the gods of Norse mythology.